first one that always comes to my head is don't lie, don't cheat, don't steal. Those three things are the core values, so that's why I try and instill in them. And our mantra in the Standard family is never give up.
Welcome to The Art of Fatherhood, a podcast that takes you on the journey of fatherhood. Now here's your host, Art Eddy.
What's going on, everybody? Art Eddy here for the Art of Fatherhood podcast on the line. I'm very happy to have Clive Stanton. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me, sir. How you doing?
I'm so good. I'm really good. Interesting times. As far as fatherhood goes, today I'm getting ready to homeschool three kids from three different schools who are completely different ages. It's chaos, but it's good. It's very good. I'm going to spend a lot of time with my kids after being away filming Council of Dads. So there is some upside to this pandemic, I should say.
Yes, sir. Yeah, especially, yeah, I love the fact that you're taking, you know, the opportunity to teach your kids. You get an A for effort to making sure, you know, three different grades. I've got two daughters, and like we, you know, thankfully we have like the virtual assignments from their classes. And then after that, in the afternoon, I do, I go out with them and have a gym class, have them do some sprints in the backyard, just us doing stuff. So good on you for doing that, sir. And you mentioned Council of Dads on NBC. This is such a great show. This is such in our wheelhouse since we're talking about fatherhood. And like you said, you're a dad in real life. But talk about how you approach this role on Council of Dads as Anthony Lavelle. Of course, this kind of talks about this. It was based on a true story about a dad who was diagnosed with cancer. And then he got like a bunch of guys around him that he trusted and he loved and he cared about and wanted them to be like the Council of Dads to look over his kids. That's the premise of the show. I definitely, you know, put links on where people can check out the show and all that. But talk a little bit about how you approach your role, sir.
I was taking my car to the to be serviced at the garage, and it was pouring with rain in Los Angeles, and I was just dropping it off and getting about to get an Uber home, and my manager rang me, and I'd already been offered a lead in the pilot for another network, and I was just umming and ahhing whether I was going to take that. And he said, before you make any decisions, there's this script called Council of Dads I want you to read, but you need to read it straight away because the showrunners really want to meet you, and they're leaving town at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And this was like 11:30 and I still had to get home. So I said, okay. I had no idea what it was about. And I got home and I was soaking wet and I turned my computer on and I started reading this script that just seemingly fell from the sky. It was 55 pages and I was on page 21 and just started crying. And I had no idea why. And I'm not the kind of person that usually cries when I read scripts and films. I'm, you know, God, I feel like I'm cheated if I don't cry most of the time. But it just hit me somewhere. And I started thinking about what, there's two reasons why you usually cry when you connect to drama, because it's not real, and it's either because you show that empathy, you see that empathy for a character or a person you've never met before in your life, and you somehow just feel for that person and what they're going through, and that can, you know, spur something inside you. And the other reason is we cry when we see ourselves in a character, and it reminds us it gets too close to home. And this script, I think, did both to me. And I picked up the phone, like on page 21, I hadn't even finished the script. Picked up the phone and rang my manager and I was like, I got to meet these people. I need this meeting. I'll be there. And I just put the phone down, carried on reading the script. And when I went to the meeting, I started pitching myself to play Scott, the father mm-hmm. of the show. And I was there to meet for the character I play in Council of Dads, Anthony Lavelle. And Joan and Tony, the showrunners, they're like, well, you do know that dad dies in the pilot, this first episode. And I said, yeah, but I just think it's a great character. And it's so, he's such an amazing man. And, you know, I can relate. I got three kids and, you know, similar ages to the kids in the scripts, and I can play this guy. And they said, well, what if you get against Anthony? That's the character we want to see for, and he's the bigger character. He's going to be, you know, he's one of the leads of the show. Clive, in real life, my best friend in the world, has been best man at my wedding, known him the longest. He's been there for me all through my life. He was struggling with cancer, and it wasn't looking good at that point. And I think that's why it hit me. And I said, I'm not sure if I can play the best friend to a guy that's dying of cancer. Because when I choose my characters, my roles, I usually choose characters that are so far removed from myself, because that's the challenge. Yeah. I'm not a method actor at all. I like to try and get under the skin of somebody else and disguise myself. And, you know, I go into acting to draw attention away from myself, not towards myself. And I started crying in the meeting. It was all about my friend Piers. Yeah. And they said, well, maybe this is why you need to play this role. This is a character you can do something with, and I think that's why I took the meeting in the first place. I was lying to myself. I didn't want to admit that why it hit me so hard. And yeah, long story, but that was the kind of reason why that's what connected me. And I am, and now luckily my friend Piers is in remission. He's getting a lot better, so it's all worked out well for both of us. But it was a really weird concept to go, can I do this? Can I play this? It's the closest character I've ever played to myself, in more ways than one. And we'll get to that when it comes to being a father as well. I remember being at drama school, and one of the best teachers that taught me how to act, Colin Cook, used to say, if something scares you, it's a good reason to do it. You know, because whenever something scares you, you man up and you go out there and you attack it, and you'll make sure that you don't fail, because you know that anxiety in you will make you want to just beat it. And that was the reason why I took it, and it's been such a great journey. When it comes to fathers, I mean, well, the whole show in general, I think, is very important.
For sure.
But for me personally, and the character Anthony Lavelle, I mean, it's about, I mean, Anthony hasn't got a family, and he needs this family just as much as they need him, and he needs a father figure in his life. And I think there's a lot of themes in Council of Dads. It's not just about the council and the children. It's about fathers in general, and how some of them ground. In our case, the main character dies of cancer, so he's gone because death takes him away. But in real life, in the society we live in, some fathers don't stick around; they leave, or sometimes they just work away for long periods of time, and the mum is doing both roles for a very long time. Lots of different father figures in this show, and I think Anthony himself lacks a father figure, and he's got this family, and it means the world to him. But he also kind of wants to run away at the same time, and then Larry, who's one of the counselors, is kind of very much a father figure to Anthony in this, to give him the to give him the strength and spirit to kind of to be there, to man up and be that father that he always knew he could be. Because I think when you first meet him in the show, he's very much like the cool uncle. It's all like the old joke about grandparents. You can have the kids that what the best thing about them is you can give them back. These kids need this. You can't give them back. Be selfless.
Now you saying that, I think it's a very touching story, and thanks for sharing that, you know, the background of how this show came to be for you, and you know how you thought of the role, and how you said you were kind of maybe kidding yourself with certain things about which role you should take and which role you should want and all that. And you know, it kind of brought you into something where it would scare you, and that kind of took you out of your comfort level. I really appreciate that. And so just to kind of go with that, because now that answer alone, it could just spark a podcast just with more questions. But just kind of like a follow-up, it's like a two follow-up with your reaction and understanding, like, this is kind of something that was new to you in terms of finding this role and being like, all right, yes, this is different than the other roles I kind of go for. So is this role more meaningful to you than other, I mean, Vikings and other shows that you've been on? Of course, people know you, you're great in that, Taken and all that. But does this role, because of personally what it means to you? And then also, have you talked to your friend about this role, and what did he say if you did talk about this? I mean, I know you can't tell people while you're filming a show everything, but did you talk to him a little bit about this role? And so I know it's a two-part question. It's a loaded question, but does this role kind of stand out to you just because of what it meant to you right now? And then two, did you talk to your friend about this role?
Right now, it stands out. Nearly every character played means something to me, and Vikings is a big world to me. That's nearly 6 years of my life. But right now, this character meant so much to me. And I think in the world we live in right now, it's a very important stories to tell, and where I am in my career, I've obviously done a lot of action, I've done a lot of drama that can be dark and violent, and I just feel that this is the right time to sort of bring a bit of light into the world a little bit, and show that I can do my bit to kind of like lift people's spirits. I wanted to be able to put there on my complete works of Clive Standen, so to speak. I wanted to add something in there that was full of joy and was observational, and also making a comment on family, because family means a lot to me. And I think the show kind of redefines the contemporary family. It brings everyone into the fold. It's not about blood. It's about love and who shows up. And family is a lot more complex and includes a lot more people than the TV shows that are around at the moment give them credit for. I was not saying we're the first TV show to do this, but it's refreshing to update the modern family, because I grew up, my dad left when I was 8, and that's what I was trying to get at to the other. And I still find it hard to talk about, because this part of me feels like it's no one's business, and then it feels like, well, hey, do you know what? Screw him, he left. So, you got to stand up and be accountable for your actions. So I should be allowed to say, yeah, he's out there somewhere. You left me when I was 8 years old. And I grew up with an amazing man who came into the fold and took loved my mum. His name's Steve, and he became my stepdad, but he's my daddy. Yeah, anyone can be a father. It takes a strong man to be a dad.
Yes.
And he stuck around until I was 14. I still was like, you're not my dad. And he loved me, and he loved my mom, and he loved my brother. And he fixed, and he assembled this family again, and he kind of like, you know, sewed in all the rips and the tears, and he's an incredible man. And I grew up with his friends, who I called my uncles. And I had no idea they weren't really my uncles. You know, you don't think like that when you're a kid. It's about who shows up. And, you know, I have uncles from my father's family that I never see. Yeah. You know, I have family that I hardly ever see. I think a lot of us do. We might have family we see at Christmas, and that's it. It's like that token travel down Christmas. But we have family we don't see for years. Yeah. But we also have friends and parents' friends who just on a weekly, daily basis sometimes just pop in and help out. I've got friends who help out with my kids all the time. And they're more, you know, they're more like uncles and their family. And I think that's the way we live now. Our families are a lot bigger than we give credit for. And it's about love and who shows up. And also, we live in a day and age now where a lot of, especially mothers, single mothers or just mums in general that are home all day, they're a little bit afraid to ask for help because it's in our society, it's almost frowned upon. You're kind of like, well, you need help, you're not good enough. And you should be able to look at her. And it's like the Instagram life that we live. When you see these people that are posting these amazing pictures of their life all the time. Like, look at how great my life is. And it's like, no, they leave out all the bits where, you know, the dog up on the sofa and the kids kind of like, you know, homework wasn't handed in and screwed up and you have to, you know, run around at the last minute trying to put them into a costume because it's book week and they have to go as the character of a book and you know, and the kids didn't bring down the letter. And you know, we all go through all that stuff, but it's very easy now to believe that you're the only one going through it because everyone else is posting stuff or making out that their mumming and their dabbing skills are above and beyond.
Man, Clive, seriously, man, just so true. Like I always joke like about the Instagram life or the social media life, right? Like if you see a picture of a family in Disney World, you know, obviously not right now, but when people are on vacation and they're on holiday, whatever the case may be, and they have this picture, it's like, oh man, they must be having a great time. 2 minutes before, 2 minutes after that picture, chaos explodes. Someone drops their ice cream. People are crying because someone's like, you know, punching the other person in the face. The kids are, and everything is like, so you get that one glimpse of like that 2 minute. I mean, not saying that person's vacation stinks, but like you are so spot on, Clive, because we kind of live in that society of like the, you know, the FOMO, right? Like fear of missing out, but like just concentrate on yourself. And man, this show just sounds, more and more we're talking about it, this show just sounds like it was built for you. I'm so glad you're on here. When I was watching the pilot and seeing, like, now talking to you about this role, talking to you about Anthony and Council of Dads, more things sink in, and you play this character even more brilliantly just with sharing me the background. This is one of those shows where you watch it and you're like, this is going to be a hit. People are going to understand it. People are going to love it. And I think what you said too, it's not just about the traditional, quote unquote, traditional family. Family is where you connect with people, all different colors, all different races, genders, whatever the case may be. When people are there for you, they become your family as well. So I love it. I know this is kind of a hard question to answer because everybody takes in media and art differently, but for you, what do you hope, maybe like a one theme that viewers will take away from watching Council of Dads?
Well, it's got lots of messages, I think. I mean, trying to find joy in everything you do and helping those around you and make a mark on the world by doing so. And, you know, and if you can do that, and you're winning if you can do it with some grace and some humor as well. Because sometimes it takes a situation like the one in Council of Dads to force you to see things differently. And I think you don't have to have lost someone in the way that Robin loses someone to kind of, to have that change. And also one of the things that was instilled in me when I was younger, and I use this all through Vikings, I use it in nearly every character I play because it makes it easier to get under the skin of a character's actions. Because when you're starting to prepare for a character, sometimes even as the audience, you start, how can he do this? How can I justify this? And I always think some people can change more in one day than other people can change in a whole lifetime.
Oh, wow.
Some people are malleable and they learn from their mistakes. But sometimes an event happens, and that's something very much in council of dads. It just makes you look at everything differently. As if like the sunbeam is shining down just on your family, and for good or bad. So I think it's that's the theme of the show.
Love it. A couple more questions in regards to fatherhood, then we'll finish off with the fatherhood quick five, sir. And again, Clive, I really appreciate this honesty and just this conversation about fatherhood that goes, of course, beyond Council of Dads. And there's a lot of things that you were sharing, and I know that a lot of my audience will appreciate. But take me back when you found out you were going to be a dad for the first time, Clive. What was going through your mind, sir?
Oh, yeah. My eldest son, Hayden, I brought him up since he was 1 year old. So I wasn't able to be there at his birth. That in itself was scary. I met this woman and kind of went, oh, she's got a child. And you have to very quickly realize, are you going to love this child as well as this woman? And,
yeah.
So that was the first thing. And obviously I did, and I do. And But Edie, my daughter, was my firstborn. Oh, I was terrified. I remember we talked about kids, and then she just happened. It was like, oh, right, so we're having one. Whoa, okay. I was really young. I was 22 when I really started kind of being a father. And so I didn't know my arms from my elbow. I was working out as I go along. And I remember as well, you get all those books.
Yeah.
What to expect when expecting. And I remember I took all that really seriously to the point where my wife literally, if it wasn't so thick, she would have been able to rip it in half and throw it at my face. I remember being in the bath. And I'm just trying to, I'm literally like, in this book, it says you should. And she was, Carol, it says in a bloody book. And that goes back again to the social media thing we're talking about.
Yeah.
This was before social media, but there's always so much pressure to do it the right way. And what I now hold on to as a father is there is no wrong or right way to be a parent. It's the only truly unconditional love you ever find in your life.
Mm.
Because you mess up as a father. We all mess up as a father or a mother. We do. And the difference is when you wake up in the morning, that kid still looks at you and goes, I love you, Dad. And you get another chance to get it right.
Yes.
And I remember I did mess up quite a lot when I was young. But Edie, Hayden, and even Rafferty now, I was a bit older when Rafferty came along. But, we kind of have learned together and you've gone through those hiccups. But they do. I mean, you feel awful. You feel like they're going to hold a grudge against you, but they don't. They just wake up and go, let's try again today. And you eventually get better at it and better at it, better at it. And which relationships were like that, and with other family members and things like that, you tend not to be so simple. But and you bond through all those things. I just feel like my kids teach me just as much as I teach them on a daily basis.
Love that, man. Thanks again. This is great. Talk about some of the core values you're looking to instill into your kids as they're growing up.
Well, the first one that always comes to my head is don't lie, don't cheat, don't steal. Those three things are the core values that. In their child life, when they're dealing with me, they're the three things. If I find out they're lying to me, or they're cheating, or they're stealing, then in a number of different ways, that's what infuriates me, and I can't. So that's why I try and instill in them. But our mantra in the standard family is never give up. You can cry, you can sweat through it, and everything, but you don't give up. You try your best, and you often through that struggle, you find the best in yourself. Just play with passion and never give up. And that's,
nice.
They're the two of the things that we kind of, and playing is one of the most, I wish, this is a new thing. I wish, I go back to like when you talk about your kids' first words, Edie's was duck. She used to go around going duck, duck, and looking at ducks in the air. But I wish I could have just, I'd sat in front of my kids and just gone, adventure, adventure. Try and make that their first word, because that's what I'm at now with the kids. I'm like, everything's an adventure. Let's have an adventure together. Even now with this virus going around, and we're in I was saying to them, they want to do movie nights, and it's great because they want Dad to show them all of my favorite movies and things, and we're sharing, and we're doing movie marathon stuff. But I'm like, let's get out of the house and let's have an adventure. We're self quarantining. We got the dog. But let's just go and explore, because we've just moved to Los Angeles as well. We don't really know much around it. So I'm just getting that car sometimes and just going on an adventure.
Nice.
Everything can be an adventure. Yeah. It's about, I was talking about this just literally yesterday with someone. It's about, there's so much pressure now to find perfection in things. And I really strongly believe, and I stole this from the book Fight Club. It's not in the movie, it's in the book. It's the first time the main character sees Tyler Durden, and Tyler Durden is on the beach making what seeming looks like a sculpture out of driftwood, and the main character goes over to Tyler and he says, what are you doing? He goes, wait, and he goes, for 1 minute of every day when the sun shines on these pieces of driftwood, it makes the perfect shadow of a hand, but a minute after, then the hand is distorted and just looks like a mess. But for 1 minute of every day, that hand is perfect. And I've been saying to my kids, all you can expect from perfection is a moment. And you have to enjoy that moment because it's gone just as quickly. But if you look for those moments, you can have hundreds of them every day. But people are always striving for that one perfect thing and they miss out on all these other moments. And they'll never get it. They'll never get it because, and this is part of my character as well. And Anthony in Council of Dads, I have one of the tattoos on Anthony's many tattoos in his arms. So to live the questions, which is from the Council of Dads book, which is one of my famous quotes. It's about we go through our life looking for the answers for everything, and we miss out on just enjoying living the question. The questions show us so much and can give us so much joy. But if we're always going for the answer, we're always going for the end game, we miss out on all that. So there you go. That's one of the things I try and explain to my kids.
Oh man, that's, you know, just kind of what you're saying right there combined with looking for adventure. It feels like your motto is, it's like, it's not about the destination, it's about the journey, right? And man, that's powerful stuff right there. And it almost bleeds into my next question. What is one big piece of advice you'd offer to new dads, Clive?
I think what I just said, it's like, you're not going to be perfect at it. New dads, it's just like, you know, you'll try and you'll fail and you'll wake up in the morning and they'll forgive you for it. Just as long as you keep trying, that's the most important thing. Don't be one of those dads who gives up.
Yeah.
So, and it's the best thing that ever happened to you.
Yeah.
Changed my life. I'm glad. I mean, it was tough. I was a young dad, and I'm an actor as well. And an actor is a very insecure job. You know, you don't know where the next job is coming from, and a lot of it's rejection. And I was terrified back then. I had two kids by the age I was 25, and you know, I was running around doing those out of work jobs. I was driving vans around, delivering things across the British Isles. I was giving out stuff in the street and, you know, giving out leaflets and all sorts of just to make sure that I had the mortgage covered and things like that, because, you know, when your kids come in, you can't just think about yourself. And but it really did change my view on everything, because I thought, God, I have no time to prepare for these auditions. I have no time because I've got kids. But I found that I had more time, because there's so many hours of the day that you kind of waste when you're just thinking about yourself. But when you've got kids, you find time, because the time you have to yourself becomes valuable. And, you know, when they're in bed or when they're at school or whatever, I was using that time productively to progress my career. And I actually think, and because I'm doing it for them, it gives you an added drive to go, I need to succeed for them. That's why I say they're one of the best things that ever happened to me as well. They gave me a kick up the ass and they made me work. And if anything, I had more time and more passion to prepare for this stuff. And I kind of put down where I am today because of my kids. That added drive, get up in the morning.
So true, Clive. I really appreciate this conversation on fatherhood. And now we're going to go into the fatherhood quick five. You mentioned family movie night. Talk about the favorite family movie you guys like to watch right now, especially that you guys are kind of, you know, doing the social distancing and all that stuff. But what's your favorite family movie right now?
Oh, well, the most recent one, which sometimes you get it completely wrong as well. I mean, my kids wanted to watch Ad Astra. Okay. We started watching that, and then my 9-year-old just fell asleep in the first 20 minutes. He was like, this is boring. He wanted to watch it because he saw Spaceman. Yeah. The other two loved it. It was, because that's about fatherhood as well, that film, actually. I didn't think about it. And then I had Dad Fail as well, where I remember Gladiator thinking, well, I can learn about the Roman Empire and how violent it was. So we're going to put that on. So, like, the older ones is fine. I got a 17-year-old, and the 13-year-old is going on 17.
Yeah.
But yeah, again, the 9-year-old, I'm like, whoa, okay, go and watch that one. And he was like, yeah, but it's great, because he loves all that. Because I was in Vikings, I think he just loves all the kind of historical stuff. But I just, yeah, for some reason.
Yeah. Okay.
But we're doing some of the old ones as well, Singing in the Rain, stuff like that.
Nice.
Which is great. Kind of going back and doing some of the old movies.
Very cool. Wide range of movies. Love it. Favorite song right now that you guys have as a family, or is there a band you were really excited to introduce them, or an artist you were really excited to introduce them when they got to a certain age?
Yeah, I didn't even have to introduce my daughter to actually. She's got this brilliant friend, Maggie, and they both, for Christmas, Evie got an old record player, so she wanted all these vintage records and things. So I was really surprised. I thought I was going to have to educate her on on music, and she's coming home. And she wants these records of Fleetwood Mac and the Stones and
nice.
yeah, she's got some Bowie and the Beatles, and you know, I'm like, wow, okay, you're set. You go, you just carry on doing what you're doing. Yeah, or improve.
Nice.
Peter, my eldest, is into music. I have no idea. I don't even understand this rap stuff. We've had long talks in the past though as well about certain music he's listened to, where it's, you know, it's very degrading to women and not very good role models. And I'm like, well, the way that guy's singing now, you know, the way he's singing about his girlfriend or the girl that he likes across the dance floor, do you think that that's appropriate? Do you think you condone that? If, you know, that you have a sister and a mother and a grandma and all that kind of stuff, do you think that you speak to, you know, your mum and your sister like that, or your girlfriend? Would you speak to your girlfriend like that? And yeah, we had an answer, and it got to the point, this was years ago, I was like, why don't you write me an essay on why you think this music is empowering to you? And he couldn't, so but he's changed his values now, but he still listens to this rap music, which I have no idea what it's about. And Post Malone, actually, he listens to. I think Post Malone's pretty cool.
Nice.
But oh yeah, he's lost me. Sometimes I give him, I'm in the car and I'm like, you can connect your music to the car, otherwise he just puts his ear pods in or whatever and tries to block out the world. So I'm like, why don't you play your music in the car and we can all listen to it together? God, do I do regret that choice.
That's awesome, man. But I love the fact that you're like,
he's found his thing.
Yeah, but I love the fact that you're like, you know, talking to him about, you know, certain lyrics, whatever the case may be. Again, parenting done right, sir. Describe the perfect family vacation. Where would it be?
I always say it's who you're with, not where you are. So nice. As long as the family are there. I don't know. They all loved, we had this one holiday. It was, we went to Hawaii and we loved it. That was the most memorable holiday we had as a family. Edie and I are the adventurers. Hayden doesn't always want to go out and do the adventuring. He'll go on family excursions, but it's his worst nightmare, climbing a mountain. And Rafty's nine, but he gets tired quicker. But Edie's my daughter is the adventurer in the family. And we had this one day where my wife wanted to just sit by the pool and have a day to herself reading the book, and Hayden stayed at home. I stayed at the hotel doing stuff in the hotel. And I booked like a 9-hour hike through volcanic. The trail to go to the volcano. But it was meant to be in a big tour. And the guy turned up in the morning and he said, like, this whole party, that, you know, like the 13 people that are meant to be coming with you or whatever, have all come down with food poisoning. So it's just you and your daughter. Do you still want to go? And we were like, hell yeah, we want to go. We had our own private tour.
Oh,
and
man.
We were on bikes and walking, hiking. We went for 9 hours and we stopped on the way back. We left really early in the morning. We stopped back really late at night because in Hawaii, they have all the diners are open late at night. There's no bars and things like that. And I remember we stopped at a diner and had pancakes or something at 10 o'clock at night. And it was like me and my daughter for all day. And it was just, you know, I'll never forget that. We got some great pictures, but it's about the memories that are imprinted on, you know, the inside of your eyelids. And like, kind of just being out there, and it's hot and sweaty and you're going over just this black lava fields and things. And so, yeah, I mean, I've got loads of memories and go on and on and on. But that Hawaiian holiday was incredible to us.
Oh, wow, what a wonderful time. Thanks for sharing that. And you and your Council of Dads crew did such a great job of starting this this dad joke thing. So I got to ask you, man, what's your favorite dad joke of all time? Do you have one?
My favorite dad joke? Oh, there's so many, but what would be my favorite dad joke? Too many in my head. Well, actually, the most simple one, which is not the best one, but the one that my go-to for ages, which was, why do crabs not give to charity?
Why is that?
Because they're shellfish. They're shellfish.
Nice. I love the one that my kids are. They're like, oh, Dad, it's cold in here. Can we turn on the heat? And I'm like, just stand in the corner. And they're like, why? Because it's 90 degrees.
So the ultimate one is telling a dad joke when you're not a dad.
Yeah. Well said. And lastly, what are the top three words you hope your kids would use to describe you as a dad?
Top three words: fair, honest, safe. I don't know. I like to feel that they feel they're safe with me.
Nice, very.
Because that's
cool.
One of the biggest things that we want to keep them safe. I hope that, you know, there's been periods where I do take them on these adventures and things, and I always think that I hope that they don't think I'm just this gung ho crazy dad that's like pushing them, you know, too far. I hope they always think they're safe with me.
Well, Clive, I so appreciate this chat on fatherhood. Really appreciate your take on father. You can, you know, people can see that, you know, you really take the role of a dad very seriously, and I appreciate that. Council of Dads, I feel like that role of Anthony Lavelle was made for you. You did such a great job in, you know, episode one. Can't wait to see the rest. And people, make sure you follow Clive on Twitter at Clive Stan, and make sure you check out Council of Dads on NBC. Of course, we'll put up links on where people can find all that good stuff. But again, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day. Good luck with the homeschooling thing. I know I got to be doing that pretty much later today, but continued success in the future, sir.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Art of Fatherhood podcast. Leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and go to theartoffatherhood.net.